Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. This is, of course, brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, where you can compete in multiple fantasy football leagues, as well as stay up to date with Serie A with numerous great writers, including frequent guests on our podcast, John Solano, Chloe Beresford, and today, Enrico Passarella, who is at the end of the podcast going to help us preview Serie A, and it was really, really outstanding. So I'm joined by our great friend, Alex Goldberg, producer of the podcast, co-host, maker of viral videos on Twitter that are just taking over the platform. So, Alex, we've had, we previewed the season a little bit on Monday. You and I got to hear Enrico Passarella break down pretty much the entire league for us in the interview segment before we recorded this. So now we have to put our chips in the middle of the table and actually start making our own predictions. So Alex, let me ask you, we've talked about the top six teams. I'm going to give them in no particular order. We have Inter, Juve, Roma, Lazio, Milan. How do you rank them going into the season?
All right, my predicted top six, David, goes like this. I'm not very smart, but I'm smart enough to have Juventus number one, absolutely. They are definitely the clear favorites in my mind, and I'm sure many people's minds. So I won't spend any more time saying Juventus number one. Number two, it would have to be Inter. It has to be Inter. I have to stay consistent. What a summer they absolutely had. I've talked about it before on the podcast. I didn't just love the acquisitions they made, but I love the fact that the acquisitions were mainly Serie A to Serie A acquisitions. So they acquired players that will be ready to go that won't really need to adapt to the league. I like Spalletti. I have Inter number two. Number three, that one took me a little bit of thinking. I've been going back and forth between Napoli and Lazio for the number three spot. I do think Napoli will definitely diminish from last year. However, I'm taking them third. I still love Carlo Ancelotti as a manager. Napoli held on to a lot of their same team. Sure, they lost Jorginho, who is great, but they did get Fabian Ruiz. I like Napoli three. Also, I think Milik will definitely help them this season and give them almost an extra spark they did not have last season. Sure, he's not a real addition, but I kind of view him as an addition. And of course, they held on to Koulibaly. Four, I've hinted at it. I have Lazio. I really like Lazio in the number four spot. I am a little bit worried about their midfield and their defense. Of course, they lost De Vrij. However, they held on to Milinkovic-Savic so far. They held on to Luis Alberto and Ciro Immobile, and those three make a dynamic trio up front. And they also have Strakosha, who I really like in net. I think Inzaghi will get a nice year out of Lazio. I have them fourth. Fifth and sixth, ooh, this was really tough for me. I was going to have Milan six, but I'm bumping Milan up to fifth because of the acquisitions they've made this week in Laxalt and Bakayoko, who, yes, was not impressive for Chelsea, but I expect to be much better this year for Milan, and, of course, also Gonzalo Higuain. The late acquisitions Milan have made have me bumping them up to fifth. And then I have Roma six, but I'm really not slighting Roma. Maybe some may think I am by having them sixth. I do like what they've done over the summer. However, I'm putting a lot of stock into losing Alisson, who was amazing last year for Roma. And I also think some of their acquisitions, like a Kluivert, are more for years to come, not necessarily this year. I have my doubts that'll have a good first year in Serie A. So Roma, for me, are almost more a team of the future. Of course, they also have Under and Patrick Schick, who I think could have good seasons. But I don't know. I see the loss of Alisson and Nainggolan as maybe hurting Roma. And I do like Eusebio Di Francesco, but I have them sixth. So, David, that's my top six. What about you?
So I got to be honest, I really labored a lot on these rankings. I kind of have a method going into the season of things that I look at to rank the teams. And this year it was more difficult than usual. So I decided to take even more time with my method. I'm going to let our listeners in to really the things that I look at for the teams. And one thing, you know, I've never been shy to admit my influences, people that I respect and that I've taken things that they do well. And there's this NFL analyst who actually used to work on the Pats front office, so Mike Lombardi, who contributes to The Ringer. He's been doing a lot of podcasts with Bill Simmons for a while, and he ranks players on teams as blue chippers and red chippers. And what blue chippers are like outstanding players at their position. So let's say, for argument's sake, a blue chip player is someone who could play regularly at Juve, and a red chipper would be someone who could start regularly on a team competing for a Champions League spot. So one thing that I really do when I'm trying to rank teams is just write down all the players that I consider to be blue and red chippers. Then I also look at the manager, of course, the impact that they might have. And then I also really like to look at the goalkeepers. Maybe it's because when I was growing up, I used to play as a keeper. So I kind of rank those things. That's the kind of the objective way that I try to look at teams. But then, you know, there are also some factors to consider. So without further ado, this is how I have them. I'm not going to spend too much time on Juve. I'm not going to say they are an overwhelming favorite, but they are the clear favorite going into the season. So they're number one. I'm not going to get into too much on their squad. Everyone knows the level of the players that they have. Not surprisingly, I have Inter number two. I think Spalletti is a very big asset to this team. It's going to be interesting, though, to see how Spalletti is going to handle being in the Champions League instead of just being in Serie A like last season. I think their goalkeeper, Handanovic, of all the teams listed here, is the best goalkeeper. Donnarumma, at his peak, if he plays like his first season as a starter, is just as good as Handanovic. But the Donnarumma we saw last year, Handanovic is clearly better. You look at Inter squad, they have a bunch of blue chippers. Just look at their three center backs, Skriniar, De Vrij, Miranda. I think Inter, like, that's as good a trio of center backs as you could have. You can either play all three of them or you can rotate. Then up front, we have Perisic and Icardi. To me, blue chip players for sure. I still have Nainggolan as a blue chipper because he's going back to Spalletti. I don't think he's coming off a particularly good season. There's a lot of reasons to be concerned, but I'm going to put him as a blue chipper because Spalletti knows how to get the best out of him. Then they have a good amount of red chippers. Lautaro Martinez, very promising, having a great preseason. I think their two wing backs are a massive upgrade, Asamoah and Vershalko. Vershalko's coming back to Serie A, but he knows the league. I think we can put as a red chipper Brozovic after his excellent World Cup, and he was really good in the second half of last season, and everyone knows how much I like Kita Balde. So that's Inter. I have them second. Now, I've been very negative on Napoli, probably too much, but now that I've really tried to look at this objectively, I'm going to rank them third. At the end of the day, they're still bringing back almost an entire squad that got to 91 points. They just lost Jorginho, replaced them quite well with Fabian Ruiz, and they added Verdi, who's going to be, I think, a really good addition for them. But I'm very concerned about their keeper position. I'm not sure how much Ospina moves the needle. You know, when Mere comes back, very promising keeper, but we have to see, he's been injury prone, so we have to see if he can stay healthy and how he adapts to playing in a title race. But you take the goalkeeper position away, they have a lot of blue chippers. Obviously, Koulibaly, to me, the best defender in Serie A at the moment. I have as a blue chipper the combination of Hamsik and Zielinski, two players that last season Sarri rotated quite a bit. Hamsik last season definitely struggled, except for one stretch where he played well. Zielinski, though, I definitely think is a worthy replacement. So together, I have him as a blue chipper. Their two wingers, Caleon and Insigne, of course, blue chippers. Dries Mertens, let's see how he adapts to Ancelotti, but talent-wise, he has to be a blue chipper. I think a healthy Goulam, one of the best left-backs in Serie A. And I have as a blue chipper midfielder Allan, who I thought last season, other than Koulibaly, was Napoli's best player. Really, really underrated player. I think he's really good. They have a couple of red chippers. Of course, we have Hijaz, the right back. I'm going to make Fabian Ruiz a red chipper. And then there are two young players who I think could have big seasons, Milik and Diarra. and I have Verdi as a red chipper. So I have Napoli third. I probably wouldn't have said that on Monday, but after all the research, they're the team that I brought up the most. Now here, I'm different than you. I still have, I have Roma fourth, and really what swayed me is the addition of Nzonzi. We'll get a little bit more into that on the questions for Roma. I still think Di Francesco last season really impressed me. He handled really well managing Roma, one of the most the highest pressure cooker probably in all of Serie A, as being the manager at Roma. But I am concerned, as you said, Alisson gone. I think Olsen could be a big drop-off. Now, what's interesting about Roma, and maybe I'm being a little bit too harsh, I don't have him with too many blue chippers. I have his definite blue chippers, obviously Dzeko, Manolas, and I'm going to give Nzonzi a blue chip, although he's new to Serie A, just because I think he's a really good fit on the team. But they do have a lot of red chippers. Kolarov and Fazio coming off good season. They are older. Let's see if they have a drop-off. I think Florenzi's definitely a red chipper. Kevin Strootman's been taking a step back the past few seasons, but I still have him as a red chipper. They're two offensive wingers, Under and Kluivert. Definitely have a lot of talent. Let's see how they do. Cristante's coming off a great season at Atalanta. I think Schick is going to have a bounce back season. And then we have Pellegrini. So a lot of red chippers for Roma, but I think quite a few of them have the potential of becoming blue chippers, especially Fazio and Kolarov. I knocked them down for age, but they still could be really good. So I have Roma fourth. Now I have Lazio fifth, and I think to their advantage is the manager, Simone Inzaghi. Definitely a big plus for them. You mentioned Strakosha being a way above average keeper in Serie A. You mentioned their trio of players, Alex, Milinkovic-Savic, Immobile, and Luis Alberto. Obviously, those are blue chippers. I put Lucas Lieva as a blue chipper as well because last season he was really outstanding. Simone Inzaghi got the most out of him. They have a good amount of red chippers. Parolo, though he's older, still a very important player in their midfield. I think Acerbi and Martin Caceres could help replace De Vrij, but I do have some concerns over that. I think Badelj coming from Fiorentina on a free transfer was another brilliant move for Lazio on the transfer market. Marusic last season was one of the best right wing backs in the whole league. We have captain Lulic. I still have him as a red chipper. Correa coming back to Serie A could be, could really help replace Felipe Anderson. I have high hopes for their other two new additions from outside the league, and that's Durmisi, who Lazio is very high on as a left wing back, and midfielder Berisha, who they brought from Salzburg. Now I have Milan sixth, and the reason I say that is while I definitely think Gattuso deserved to be given the chance to manage the team, when you compare him to the other coaches on this list, he's just an unknown quantity. Donnarumma, again, we don't know which one of the two is going to show up, the one from the first or the second season. If it was somewhere in the middle, that would be still a big asset for Milan. Now, as far as the blue chippers that Milan has, obviously Gonzalo Higuain, Romagnoli coming off a great season. I have Suso, although he struggled a little bit under Gattuso. As a blue chipper, and Kalanoglu, who I fought in the second half of the season, was really outstanding. So those, to me, are definite top players. Red chippers, I'm not as high on Bonaventura as a lot of other people, so I have him not as an elite player, but as a very good player. I think Caldara certainly has the potential to get there. Let's see how he adapts to a four-man defense, if that's what Milan goes with, and we'll get into that more with the questions. I'm a big fan of the Laxalt signing. I definitely think he's going to be a big addition to Milan. I think Bakayoko has the potential to have a bounce back season. Look, just a year ago, he was on the team of the season for the Champions League. Biglia was much better in the second half of the season. Cutrone had a breakout season. I think Frank Kessie, although he ran out of gas, might be even better this season because I think Milan with Bakayoko, maybe they don't always use them together. They could rotate a little bit. And I think Conti at right back if he's healthy, could be a big asset. So that's my order. I have Juve, Inter, Napoli, Roma, Lazio, and Milan. It was a long debate, but that's where I landed. So those are our top six. Now let's get into some game predictions. We had on Monday our great friend Thousand Names come in and give us the predictions for the season. And today he sent me in the picks for three games. So for our newer listeners, last year, Thousand Names always picked three games. I did as well. We didn't keep track of them as well as we should have, but this year we're going to keep track of this. Let's see who does better between Thousand Names and us. I also encourage our listeners to play along. If you want to send in your predictions, just use the CalcioLand hashtag and let's see how you guys do. So Thousand Names sent me three predictions, starting with Lazio-Napoli. He has Napoli winning 2-1 at the Olimpico. Goals by Acerbi for Lazio, Insigne, and Callejon. The comment is Lazio starting off from right where they left off, losing at home with no dignity. And he says Ancelotti is going to thank that incompetent Inzaghi and the two overrated players, Immobile and Milinkovic-Savic. So Thousand Names is coming in hot. Sometimes I don't know if he's serious or not, but he's coming in hot. In Italian for our listeners in Italy, Lazio Napoli 1-2, Acerbi, Insigne, Callejon. La Lazio riparte dove avevamo lasciata, perdendo in casa senza dignità. Ancelotti ringrazia l'incapacità di Inzaghi e dei bidoni sopravvalutati Immobile, Milinkovic-Savic. Not surprisingly, I'm going to disagree. I have this game as 1-1. I'm going to have Immobile scoring against his hometown team, and I'm going to have my boy Milik starting the season on the scoring sheet. Next pick by our friend Thousand Names. Roma travels to Turin to face the Granata Torino. He has it as 1-1. Goals by Belotti and Zecco. He says that Mazzarri is going to own Di Francesco. He says Monchi's transfer market was ridiculous. A lot of half-assed players that can't really contribute. In Italian, Torino-Roma 1-1, Belotti-Zecco, Mazzarri in carta Di Francesco, Mercato Monchi ridicolo, tanti mezzi giocatori, fidatevi. I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to have this game as 1-1. And I'll actually agree with the two goal scorers. I'll go with Belotti and Zecco as well. So final match, and this is actually the first one on the schedule on Saturday, Chievo and Juventus. Thousand Name coming in hot on this one as well, 1-1. He has Dybala and Giaccherini with the goal of the X. He says the comment is Ronaldo's going to miss a penalty kick. Juve is going to be saved by referee Pasqua, and that Cristiano Ronaldo is essentially a Real Madrid reject. And he says that Chievo president Campedelli is going to be laughing so hard. He's going to be crying on the phone about Marotta calling Inter's former president Moratti to celebrate the fact that Inter had the real Ronaldo, the phenomenal, the Brazilian one. So a Thousand Names coming in hot. In Italian, Dybala, Giaccherini, 1-1, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, Juve salvata dall'arbitro Pasqua, Cristiano scarto Real, Campedelli in lacrime, deride Marotta al telefono con Moratti, celebrando il vero Ronaldo, il fenomeno dell'Inter. I'm going to disagree. I have Juve winning this 2-0. I have Dybala actually scoring Juve's two goals. Dybala tends to start the season very, very strong, and I think this season won't be any different. And one thing that people are always coming at us hot and always strong and consistent are our listeners. You can always send in questions using the CalcioLand hashtag because we had a lot to cover today. We don't have too many. We'll go over more of them on Monday. So, Alex, which questions are we going to go over today?
All right, David, let's start with this question. What did you make of Milan landing Laxalt?
I think this was a great deal. I mean, we've talked a lot about Laxalt on the podcast. I'm kind of shocked there wasn't a bigger market developing around him, A, because it's so hard to find quality left-wing backs. He was one of the best in all of Serie A last season. And B, because I thought he played really well in the World Cup. I thought he was someone that was really going to benefit from being on that big stage. But great for Milan that he was available in the last week of the transfer window. This deal, Leonardo really had shades of Galliani, who was one of his mentors. A deal with Genoa, their longtime partner, Galliani Preziosi, really were quite the duo in the last week of the transfer window. It was actually centered around the previous deal. Most of the payment for Laxalt is represented by the money that Genoa owns on La Padula, which would have been due next year. They're anticipating that. So Milan gets a deal done with Genoa, but compared to the recent deals with Genoa, this is a big upgrade. The last two players, and these are off the top of my head, there could have been more, were Bertolacci and Antonelli. I think Laxalt is clearly better. I really think Laxalt's going to give Gattuso a lot of tactical flexibility. A lot of people ask me, does this mean Ricardo Rodriguez is leaving? Does this mean Ricardo Rodriguez on the bench? Actually, they both could play. Ricardo Rodriguez can also play as a center back in a three-man back line. I could see Gattuso experimenting with that. That would also help Caldara, who has more experience in that, with Laxalt either playing in the midfield as a left winger. I could also see Laxalt even playing as an offensive winger in certain situations. So I think this deal's a home run for Milan. Very hard to find quality left backs. Milan in the summer added Strinic, who also had a very good World Cup, and Laxalt to go with Ricardo Rodriguez. So Milan has to be thrilled with this deal.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. This is probably the deal, along with Bakayoko, even though I didn't love him last year. Those are probably the two deals that made me have Milan go from 6th to 5th in my projections. So, David, moving on, next Twitter question. Did Roma overpay for Steven Nzonzi considering his age?
So, you know, I always like to talk about, I never really look at transfers so much in a vacuum. I try to look at them in a context. And when I, you know, there's not going to be much resale value or any with Nzonzi. He turns 30 towards the end of the year. They invested $30 million to sign him. But I don't think it's an overpay because you look at, and you pointed it out too, and we talked about it in the intro, Roma has a lot of promising young players. They have a lot of players that they can make a big plusvalenza profit down the road. You know, they have Coric, Cristante, Kluivert, Under. Like, I think it's okay if not every player has huge resale value. So in this context, I don't think they overpaid. Also because he really addresses a dire need on the team. The defensive midfielder role, Roma was pretty thin because De Rossi is, you know, he's closer to my age than yours, Alex, and that's not a good sign if you're a player. And they also had Gonalons, who really struggled last season, so they definitely need him. So I think this was a really good deal about Roma. Considering the context, I wouldn't worry too much of it being an overpay or not.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Can you explain the various roles directors hold on Italian clubs? And do you think Premier League clubs should follow the model more?
It's a very good question. I was asked this multiple times. I think, you know, a lot of Premier League fans are very impressed with how Italian directors get players fairly cheap on these loan deals. Just very shrewd on the market. And, you know, there are some pretty specific roles in Italy, the directors. So I'll go over this in broad terms and give you some real life examples. I'm not a huge expert on how it works in the Premier League, but I definitely get the vibe. It's a little bit different. So every Italian team has a sporting director. So someone who's really in charge of like picking players, scouting them, those sort of things. So at Juve, there's Paratici, who's really the scout, the guy that picks the players and discovers them. Milan last season had Mirabelli doing that role. Monchi at Roma has that role. Most sporting directors also work with an executive director, someone who handles more the financial side of things, and someone who really acts as a liaison between the board, the president, and the rest of the team. On Juve, that role is held by Marotta. So I think Marotta and Paratici are an amazing duo. I think Marotta is one of the shrewdest people out there when it comes to finances. You know, we talked about it a while back. I didn't think Juve could afford Cristiano Ronaldo. When they signed Cristiano Ronaldo, I thought they were going to sell a bunch of big name players. They didn't do that at all. Instead, Juve was able to make a lot of profits on younger players. So to all Juve fans who were crying about Caldara leaving, that deal is what allowed them to keep the Alexandros, the Pjanic of the world, players that can actually help them win the Champions League in the near future. So Marotta's more the finance guy. Paratici is the sporting director. At Milan last season, we had Mirabelli picking the players and Fassone handling the financial aspect. Now, on some other clubs, what's interesting is on some clubs, the president is more involved than in others. As an example, on Lazio, we have Lotito, the president, who kind of plays the Marotta role at Juve with his sporting director, Tare, who I think is an outstanding sporting director. If I was an English club, Premier League club, looking to get a director in Italy, maybe Tare would be the one that I'd really look at. I don't think Paratici would leave Juve. Obviously, he's the gold standard, but I think Tare is a great backup. On Napoli, we kind of have similar. Giuntoli plays the sporting director role, but De Laurentiis is very involved with transfers. So those are kind of like the dual roles. If you look at like the history of Serie A, I'd say the two most famous directors were Moggi and Galliani. Interestingly, Galliani kind of wore both hats. He was technically the executive director on the financial side. When Braida was still at Milan before he went to Barcelona, he was in theory more of the sporting director role, but Galliani was very involved with that. Moggi at Juve, you know, was in the famous triade with Giraldo and Bettega, and Juve has kind of have their own triade now with Marotta, Paratici, and Nedved. Nedved being the former player, kind of like Bettega with Moggi. Moggi was a little bit like Galliani, really had his hands in everything, and that's actually a good way of describing Moggi. So those were kind of like the blueprint, and I feel like since Moggi and Galliani, it's kind of evolved a little bit with the dual roles. So I'd be very interested to see if more Premier League clubs try to follow this route. There's definitely a long tradition in Italy of this.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Are there any teams outside of the top six in Serie A worth following?
Yeah, absolutely. And two teams that we definitely haven't talked enough about on the podcast are Fiorentina and Atalanta. Fiorentina has an exciting duo of Chiesa and Simeone, young players, both come from fathers that were successful players. They added Piaka to the mix. They also added anyone who plays FIFA or a football manager knows how promising goalkeeper Lafont is. So I would definitely look at Fiorentina. Also Atalanta, very, very intriguing front line. They added Duvan Zapata. They already had Papu Gomez, Ilicic, youngster Barrow, who was very promising at the end of the season. Gasperini, although he plays a three-man back line, plays pretty exciting football. So those are teams to watch. If you want to go deeper into the table, I would look at Sassuolo. I really like their manager, De Zerbi, did well at Benevento, although they were relegated. Pretty exciting team. And I'm irrationally confident on Genoa. I think Genoa fans should be terrified of the fact that I'm so irrationally confident about them, because I really like a lot of the moves that they made. They added Romulo, they added midfielder Sandro, who used to play for Spurs, brought back Criscito on defense. So those are some teams to watch other than the big six.
All right, David, how about this? What can we expect from ESPN's coverage of Serie A?
Yeah, so this is more for people here in the United States. So ESPN won the rights for Serie A. It took a while. I actually read a very interesting article on The Athletic, great site. If you haven't subscribed, I strongly recommend it. They were talking about the negotiation because basically ESPN had been negotiating to buy the rights for a few months. Originally, they only wanted to buy like about 80% of the rights and leave the rest to maybe another streaming provider. We're seeing that in Italy with Sky Sport having most of the games, but also the streaming company DAZN owning the refs. So originally ESPN wanted to follow that model, but guess what? Then the Ronaldo deal happened, and all of a sudden ESPN's like, wait a second, we just want to buy all the rights. So ESPN's going to have at least one game of the week on regular TV, so either ESPN or ESPN2, and the rest of them on their app ESPN Plus, which costs $5 a month. I really think in the U.S. you're seeing more and more of this, like the Champions League, which is owned by TBS, TNT Sports. They are showing a lot of them on the app here in the U.S., you know, with cord cutting or whatnot. That's really where it's headed. You know, I'm old. I like just having everything on TV, but I also understand that this is where it's going. I will say at least the ESPN Plus app, I've had it for a while, is really excellent. I don't think you're going to have many technical issues with it. You also get a lot of great content on other sports. So I recommend it. You know, full disclosure, I'm a freelance writer for ESPN, but I'm not really an employee, but I recommend that. I will tell you that I think there's going to be a very pleasant surprise for those that have been following Calcio here in North America with ESPN. I'm going to leave it at that. I think, though, you're going to be quite happy, and you're going to have even more reason to want to tune in to ESPN.
You just gave ESPN and ESPN Plus a million more subscriptions there, David. All right, let's move away from football. What is your favorite Rage Against the Machine song?
This was a good question. And I love when people ask me these questions on music, because I hadn't listened to Rage Against the Machine in quite some time. So I was listening to them today to get ready for this. So obviously, really original band. Some other bands had combined rap and rock and heavy metal together, but not quite like Rage Against the Machine, especially once they started adding, you know, once the political side to it as well. Just a really interesting band. I feel, you know, in a way, I really wish they were still around as a full unit now. The guys in Rage, other than Zach De La Rocha, the singer, have been in a lot of projects together. They were obviously in Audioslave with Chris Cornell. They've done a new band, Prophets of Rage, with Chuck D of Public Enemy and Be Real of Cypress Hill. I actually really wish Be Real wasn't in it. And not that I don't like him, but I think it'd be so much better with just Chuck D. But I digress. There's a lot of great Rage Against the Machine tracks. Obviously, Bulls on Parade is a very easy answer. The great single, that's their most famous song, I'd say, but I really like Freedom off their debut album, is a really great track. But if I really have to say what my favorite Rage Against the Machine track, it was Tom Morello's answer to Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. When Paul Ryan was asked what his favorite band was, he tried to sound hip and cool by saying against Rage the Machine. And Tom Morello said, you know what, Mr. Ryan, you represent exactly the machine that we're raging against. So that's my favorite Rage Against the Machine track. I'm not going to get into more into politics, because some listeners hate that. So that's those are the questions. We'll do more on Monday. Without further ado, we're going to continue our preview of Serie A with the outstanding Enrico Passarella. So I couldn't think of a better person to help us wrap up our preview of the Serie A season than my good friend Enrico Passarella, based in my hometown. He's calling in from right outside Padova. And, you know, when I think of people that know Serie A, I'm blessed to know a lot, but there's very few, if any, that know the wealth of knowledge on all the teams, not the top ones, more than my great friend Enrico Passarella. You guys know him on Twitter as the Guardaline, so he's everyone's favorite linesman. You can read him, of course, on Euro Fantasy Game. I really love his articles there. He often recaps the news of the week towards the end of the week. He is also writes fantastic previews on juvefc.com. I always enjoy reading, you know, his rating of Juve's opponents. I learn a lot by those. You can also see him on oddschecker.it and RotoWire. So, Enrico, it's a real pleasure to have you back. Benvenuto a Calcioland.
Hey, thank you, David. Thank you for the kind words. Obviously, thank you for having me.
Great. So, Enrico, what I figured we'd do today was talk a little bit about Serie A as a whole. We want to dedicate, obviously, some time to the top teams, but also go over mid-table teams and the newly promoted teams to kind of give us a more well-rounded preview. And there's no one better than you for this. So for the top teams, what I figured we'd do is go over one reason why you think the top teams should be optimistic and maybe one reason for concerns for each team. So I listed them in order that they finished last season. I didn't put them in any rank. So let's start with the defending champions, Juventus. Give us one reason why Juventus should be really optimistic going into the season.
Adding Cristiano Ronaldo was obviously massive for Juventus. And I'm eager to see what kind of contribution he will be able to provide in Serie A, and I think it will be a different Juventus with Ronaldo, maybe a quicker Juventus, a little more unpredictable, and building from the slow and methodical approach they had in the previous year with Higuain. So obviously, when you add Ronaldo, you have a lot of reasons to be optimistic. Okay, while on the more pessimistic side, I would say one area of concern is maybe the midfield, because we have seen them pursue Pogba, Milinkovic, but in the end, just Emre Can joined, so maybe they could have used one more strong midfielder. We know Allegri likes to rotate the squad a lot, so maybe the midfield is a little thin. There are some rumors about Bernardeschi maybe moving to the midfield. We'll see whether those are true or not. But the midfield is a little thin, and it means maybe they have a lot of confidence in Marchisio and Bentancur as the first backup when needed.
Yeah, I agree. I've read that Bernardeschi theory. When you look at how deep Juve is up front, that could be quite interesting. So now let's move on to the runners-up, Napoli. I think you could say in a lot of ways the Sarri cycle ended. They have a lot of the same players still on the team with Ancelotti leading them. So give us both a reason for optimism and maybe a reason for concern for Napoli.
Well, Ancelotti, we know he's a great coach. He will be something different from Sarri. So there could be some inherent improvements from a different approach. And they added Simone Verdi. They added Fabian Ruiz. Milik is healthy from the get-go. So they have more depth, more options, especially on offense. And I'm sure Ancelotti will rotate the squad a little bit more and try different loops. On the other side, going against Ancelotti is the fact that Sarri has done a marvelous job a year ago. They broke the point record. They made a bazillion points. And so it's maybe a squad that has peaked last year. And we know the competition is a little bit stronger this year for the first position. So even though Ancelotti joined, the squad is not that different from a year ago to achieve that level of improvement that might be needed to challenge for the first spot this year as well.
So now let's move on to Roma, team that's had a lot of changes, a lot of new young players, and Zonzi at the end. So give me your assessment on Roma, and as usual, something that stands out to you in positive and maybe a reason for concern.
Well, Roma has been the busiest team among Monchi, has worked a lot. And if everything hits, they might have a really explosive team with Anderm making the leap, with Patrick Schipa, a year older and more integrated in the system than we know Patrick, Justin Kluivert, Brian Cristante, Javier Pastore, they made a lot of moves. And if they hit on a couple of them, Francesco will have a really deep squad with a large number of options to toy with. On the other side, we know they lost two leaders like Alisson and Raichel Angolan. So when you lose charismatic players like them, there could be some adjustments in the team in the other part of the season. So they may be at risk of slowing them up. They really have a lot of talent. So if they can find a couple of leaders quickly, they will be in good shape.
Excellent. So now let's talk to a team that a lot of people expect to be considerably better than last season. And this is Inter. Let's go on the assumption they don't get Modric. At this point, I'm pretty confident that's not going to happen. So give me your assessment on Inter, both positive and negative.
As you said, they improved dramatically. We know last season it was only Perisic and Icardi. They lived and died by them with a little bit of Rafinha in the second part of the season. But this year it is different. They have weapons. They have Lautaro Martinez, Politano, Keita. And so it is a much better offense, and they will be able to compensate if one between Icardi and Perisic gets in a little slump. On the more pessimistic side, I would say that there were good reasons why they are going after Modric, because their midfield is very, very muscular, very physical, but they could really use one more inventing playmaker to help the action start, to help distribute the ball. Maybe, I don't know, just one day to go in the transfer market, but that could be a very important addition if they put it off.
So now let's move to the team Inter beat the last match of the season for the Champions League spot. That is Lazio. As we're recording this, Milinkovic-Savic still on the team. Pretty good chance he'll still be on. So give me your assessment on Lazio. What's your take on him going into the season?
The good news is what you said. Milinkovic-Savic said to stay, probably, likely, I don't know. And then Ciro Immobile, Luis Alberto, all three are still on board. Only Felipe Anderson left, but he's been, replaced properly. And so having this continuity, this familiarity between one another, still under Simone Inzaghi, I think will be a positive. And on the other side, it could also be a negative because especially Milinkovic-Alberto took everybody by surprise a year ago, while now everybody knows them down. They will be a little more prepared. They also last year finished fifth last season, just on the outside looking in for Champions League, while this year the competition is a little bit stronger, like we said. And I'm a little wary by the fact that sometimes when a player miss out on a move to a bigger club, and I'm talking about Milinkovic-Savic, there could be a little regression if he stays put. So we know he's a great player, but maybe there might be some little lack of motivation for Milinkovic-Savic.
That's a very interesting point. So now let's move to Milan. Leonardo's definitely been very busy in the final stages of the transfer window. Give me your assessment on them, both positive and negative.
Well, I think for Milan, what they've done in the past couple of weeks is all gravy after the scenario at the beginning of the summer with the exclusion from Europa League. So Leonardo has done a great job. They have a clear plan now with Higuain. They have a lot more depth that was non-existent last season with Bakayoko, Castillejo. It looks like Laxalt as well. And so they have a much better roster, and they have also some fallback plans in if Sousa and Calhanoglu and Bonaventura do not produce on the pitch, maybe get in a slump. They could have a different option. While last year, when Sousa and Calhanoglu weren't playing well, the World Squad wasn't playing well. I think there aren't many reasons to be worried for Milan. Maybe there could be some doubts about Gennaro Gattuso. We know he's a young coach. He doesn't have much experience at the coaching level, especially in Champions League. He has now a proper squad at his disposal now, so we'll see whether he will be able to handle all the different problems that comes with that, and also with a higher expectation.
Interesting. So now, Enrico, I need your help. The next two teams, I'm going to be honest, we haven't covered on the podcast nearly as much as we should have. And, you know, we try to spread the wealth to everyone in Serie A. So let's talk a little bit about Fiorentina and Atalanta, starting with the Viola. Give me your assessment on what you expect from them this season.
Well, they finished just outside of Europa League a year ago. I think they will be about the same place, but probably they have a leg up on Atalanta this year because they kept everybody. So we know last year that basically they sold everybody. So this year they have continuity. They have young talents, Federico Chiesa, Giovanni Simeone, who are poised to keep growing. They added Marco Piazza, so they have a really dynamic trident if they all play well, stay healthy. So Fiorentina, I think it could be the right year for them to return to Europa League, while for Atalanta, we have seen the statement from Gasperini just yesterday. There is a little bit of pessimism because they lost Caldara, they lost Cristante, and it feels like they haven't been properly replaced, but it is still a very competitive squad. We have seen them do 2 years in a row. They had Zapata, Pasalic. It looks like they had Rigoni. They had Marco Varni, who got hurt. They have a few youngsters who might still keep growing. So it is no longer a surprise if Atalanta is in contention for an Europa League spot and continues to do so this year as well.
Yeah, I found the Gasperini statements pretty interesting because I felt they lost just as many good players the summer before. Maybe he's putting le mani avanti, as we say in Italy, trying to manage expectations a little bit. So let's talk about the other mid-table teams. And I picked Genoa, Torino, and Sampdoria. So tell me how you would rank these three teams and why.
Well, as of right now, I would say that Torino is a little bit above Sampdoria and then Genoa, because Torino has more center teams. They kept almost everybody. They expect Belotti to bounce back after an injury-plagued year. They expect Iago Facchi to keep producing as he did. Also, they expect Mazzarri schemes to be more efficient with some more work since he joined mid-season a year ago. Sampdoria obviously still a solid squad, but they lost Lucas Torreira and Duvan Zapata, who were centerpieces a year ago. And while they tried to replace them, they might need some time to integrate the newcomers. Even though there is some quality, we know Yankto, Defrel, good Serie A players, and some other gambles they took. But they started off very well a year ago, but that might not be the case this year. And Genoa is a little more difficult to hear because they've made a lot of moves. They completely reworked the offense. So we'll to see if all the acquisitions pan out. There is a lot of excitement for Piatek, for Kwame. They expect a lot from Judy Medeiros that they had a year ago. If all work out, maybe they could be able to take a step forward compared to the last two seasons, but I see them a level below Torino and Sampdoria.
I'm really irrationally confident on Genoa. I really love a lot of the moves. I love that Ballardini is there to start the season, but that's probably a very bad sign for Genoa that I'm so confident with them. So now let's talk, Enrico, about the newly promoted teams. And you're a great person for this because you follow Serie B, you follow our Padova 2 and Serie C. So you know the lower tables, the lower divisions really, really well. On paper, I think we have a strong batch of newly promoted teams to Serie A. We have a historic team like Parma, who's had multiple promotions in a row. We had Frosinone returning to Serie A after a year. And we have Empoli back, who's a team that usually does quite well in Serie A. So give us your assessment on these three teams and what can we look forward from them?
Well, I think they all could have a shot at staying in Serie A if a few things work well. Obviously, it will be difficult for all of them to stay, but I think they will be in contention at least. Among them, well, Parma has pulled off a flurry of moves recently that I think puts them in a very good spot for the relegation race. Inglese is a great addition for a team like this. I think having a goal poacher at this level is very important because it makes the game plan very clear. They added Alberto Grassi, who was pretty good last year at Spal. And also early in the summer, they've made an interesting mix of youth and experience that usually works well when fighting against relegation. Empoli is a very intriguing team because they have a lot of exciting youngsters: Miazai, Rade Krunic, Benasser, Antonino Lagumina that they acquired from Palermo. All very young. Obviously, the problem with such a young team is that they might struggle if they encounter some difficulties, especially early on. So there are some reasons for concern at Empoli, but if they start well, they might keep the momentum going thanks to their youth. And Frosinone, they are still working on the squad. It is a little bit of a hodgepodge because I don't feel like there is a clear plan. Maybe a stronger attack is needed. We know they rely heavily on Federico Dionisi and Daniel Cioppani, who are their historic duo up front. But they didn't get it done two years ago when they were promoted. We have to see. They added Joel Campbell, Tipe Perica. If they work out, they could be in position to contend to stay in Serie A. But I'm a little bit more down on Frosinone comparing to the other two teams.
Fantastic, Enrico. As always, you brought it. I can't thank you enough for your contributions. You really helped us give us a more well-rounded preview. Everyone, if you don't follow Enrico and you follow Serie A, definitely get on the @Guardaline account. You won't be disappointed. So, Enrico, grazie mille. It was a real pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David, and buonasera.